Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us. Eating nutritious whole foods is essential for a healthy lifestyle, and they're even more important for growing children. Whole foods provide nutrients that are crucial for child development, but unfortunately, many kids don't seem to like these foods at first. That's why we're really excited today to be joined by Haley Shaikh and the Dr. Tarek Pacha, co-author of My Superhero Foods, as well as My Superhero Sleep. They also have an amazing resource coming out called The Ultimate Guide on How to Cook Without Seed Oils. So today we're going to discuss how to incorporate healthy foods into children's lives and some tips for making whole foods fun for the whole family. So I see they...
Hi, Jenna.
Hi, Dr. Pacha. How are you?
Nice. Hey, Jenna.
Hi, how are you?
Good, good. Thank you so much for making the time. Like, really, really excited having both of you on. This is such an honor.
Our pleasure.
It's our pleasure. Thank you.
Can you hear us okay?
Yes. And this is a topic we have not really covered because we have always just been addressing adults, but never really like children and then also the entire family. So like we're like super, super stoked to have you guys on.
Thank you. We're really honored to be here. Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about yourselves and then how you decided to create your superhero book series.
Sure. So hello everyone. I'm Haley. I'm the co-founder of My Superhero Foods. This is my husband, Tarek. He's a surgeon, a urologist, also trained in functional medicine. Together, we're a blended family of eight. So we have six kids between us, which is beautifully magnificent chaos. wonderful. But the idea for the book and the company actually came about pretty early on in Tarek and I's relationship. So we were married about 4 years ago, and he would notice that my two kids from my previous marriage, who were really young at the time, would just eat all these like healthy foods, you know, like a two-year-old would request salmon and broccoli, and he'd watch me pack their lunches. And well, I guess at the time they weren't that young, but just see what I give them for lunch. And there wasn't a lot of processed foods or if any in there. And he's like, what are you doing differently? And I didn't really think about it at the time, but, you know, did start to realize, okay, you know, a lot of kids don't necessarily eat these real one ingredient foods on the regular. Not to mention request them. And so I did start to kind of reflect on what am I doing? And I think the first is that from the beginning, we just didn't bring processed foods into the house and all the kids really knew. But then more importantly, is this concept that just kind of like stuck with me, which is like our kids are way more, they're smarter than what we give them credit for. And so just teaching them at a really early age, you know, avocados have good monounsaturated B vitamins that give us lots of energy, and they'll make you jump higher when you're, you know, trying to jump with your friends. And, or like, you know, grass-fed meat gives us, more B vitamins and unique bioavailable fat-soluble vitamins that will give you lots of energy and make you run fast. And so the kids started to kind of just say, okay, well, I'm playing with my friends today and we're going to race at the park, mama. I want, you know, this food or that food. And just kind of teaching them at a young age how these foods can really fuel our bodies and make us, you know, run faster, grow taller, make our brains smarter. And then conversely, as they got a little bit older and they start to see more of the processed foods and they'd say, well, what does this give us? And it's like, well, there's not a lot of nutrients in that processed food. And so just kind of, you know, letting them come to it on their own through my guidance of real foods power us, and those are the foods that we want to be eating to grow to our best selves. And so then that was kind of the idea for the book, where you're like, you know, you're onto something, or like, we should write a kid's book. You know, the thought is we come to this information about the power of nutrition and eat when we're in our 20s, 30s, 40s, but what if we empowered our kids to college so that they can grow up with it? And then that was really the start of it.
I think the key point she just said is that empowering kids to have this powerful information sooner than later. Mm-hmm. And we didn't even get it in medical school, to be completely honest. Yep. So I think it's an important.
And
That's probably the most effective way of influencing someone's life and then down the road. And I also love on your website, like food really help people prevent and reverse and heal from diseases, which is like so significant. And not just doctors, but everybody from mine, especially when they're like much younger.
Well, she hears me talking, like I do telemedicine one day a week, and I'll often talk with my patients and go, what can I do, doc, to get such and such? Utilize food as the medicine, as it is the ultimate medicine. I don't think that's really been understood for, I mean, it's been understood in ancient cultures and so forth, but Western medicine and Western cultures, I don't think they've really appreciated the power of food as its nutrition, as information to each one of our trillions of cells.
Which is where your website coming to. We love your website. So somebody just asked about the book series title. It's a superhero book series. And then your website, mysuperherofoods.com, just have like awesome resources. And then the one question, you know, you ask on your side, and I would love you to share the answer with our viewers. So like, what is the number one misconception in foods with healthy eating?
Yeah. Well, we know this. She knew this intuitively. The so-called calorie myth, the idea that calorie equals a calorie. And we know that this is absolutely ridiculous. If you think about it, it makes perfect sense. If I told you I'm going to give you you're going to gain 100 calories from Skittles or M&Ms or 100 calories from grass-fed meat or from eggs or from broccoli, obviously the information that we put into our mouths through the food sends different messengers. And if you think about it, food is the ultimate modulator of our biochemistry. We have over 37 billion reactions per second. To think for a moment that, you know, a medicine or what are the potential side effects or what it potentially does is really arrogant to really know what it does. And same with one of the biggest problems in nutrition is like isolating a certain enzyme or isolating a certain nutrient, coenzyme Q10. It does this and this. Maybe it does a little bit of that, but maybe it needs something else within the pear or the orange or something that gives that information to allow my cells to do what, or our cells do what we need to do. But just remember, calorie is not a calorie. And that's really important to remember.
So you mentioned like Skittles, and which is like, you know, all kids love sugar. I mean, I still love sugar. So that's all, you know, all kids' favorite ingredients. You also have like a great post about natural sugar versus added sugar and the importance of quality and quantity. So, you know, how do that quality and quantity mean to you?
Yeah, I think you said it well. I love sugar. We love desserts. We bake at our house all the time. Last month, we talked a lot about having or cultivating this healthy sugar mindset, because I do think sugar often gets a bad rap, and maybe rightfully so, as it's quite nuanced. And so we do really try to differentiate the quality and the quantity. I think, you know, breaking down the quality of sugar, obviously things like whole fruit is going to have these amazing sugars that taste delicious, but it's also going to come with this nutrient density that's going to fuel our body, just like Tarek was saying. And so obviously that's at the top of the spectrum. And that's something that we do in our house is we just have it stocked with fresh fruit. And recently we found the Aldi's, it's fairly new to Ann Arbor, which is where we're at, have an organic section, and we can get our fruit for like half of what we pay at the grocery store. So we've been loving Aldi lately as fresh fruit, but we keep the house stocked with fresh fruit. If the kids do have the sweet tooth, you know, they can just go to the refrigerator or the shelf and grab some fruit. But then, you know, going down that spectrum, you have things like honey and maple syrup, molasses. These are wonderful things to cook with, especially with the right dessert. You know, they're least processed. They still have a lot of nutrients intact. And then just kind of moving down, you have the cane sugar, especially if it's an organic and unrefined. Kind of in the middle is sugar. And then below that, in our opinion, is more of the non-calorie sweeteners. Haven't been tested long-term in kids. And in general, they're ultra-processed. You know, things like yeah, and monk fruit. I don't think a lot of people realize that these are highly, highly refined. And, you know, just a little small part of the fruit or the plant that's being used. And oftentimes when we buy it in the store, it's mixed with other sweeteners, other sugar alcohols and stuff that have been associated with major GI upset. So when you get down further, it's a high fructose corn syrup and the artificial sweeteners, which are, you know, not great at all. So just really like prioritizing more of the quality sugars and then the quantity. And in our house, like I said, we bake frequently. Like my stepdaughter Tark's daughter, she just turned 14, but I learned so many baking tips from her, and she bakes with the kids. And so we're baking regularly. A strategy that we do often is just we're mindful of the sugar that we bring into the house. And so there's so many things that have added sugar in it, from your ketchup, peanut butter, to your yogurt. And we just, you know, we talk a lot about reading ingredients. And the other thing we do is read the added sugar. And if it has added sugar, we're going to find an alternative that doesn't have added sugar. And that's what we're going to choose to stock our pantry with, so that we're not filling our bodies with this added sugar that we don't even know about. And then when we do have a sweet tooth, like I said, the kids will reach for fruit. We'll reach for fruit, or we'll just bake it at home. And the real beauty when you bake it at home is that you get to control the ingredients. So, you know, you use a grass-fed butter, pastured eggs, dark chocolate, you know, maybe it's a coconut sugar. And what happens is this chocolate chip cookie that you make actually ends up being pretty nutrient dense as well. And so that's how we've really cultivated the sugar mindset, is not really eliminating sugar, rather just teaching them that, you know, we're going to bake it at home. It's not an instant gratification thing. And then we're going to enjoy it together. We'll maybe give some to our neighbors, and just really minimize the other added sugar that adds up outside of that actually baked dessert.
Add two things. With regards to the fruit, the best way to do, if you can cut it up and make it accessible, you're more likely to eat it. The family members are more likely to eat it. Just basically making the habit easier to peeling the orange, cutting up the pineapple, shilling the pomegranate. Those are daunting for even adults. So if you can kind of, you know, make that easily available, you're going to promote the habit and encourage the habit. That's a really good thing. And the second thing she mentioned about the monk fruit and the stevia, these sugar alternatives, they're multiple times, hundreds, if not thousands of times sweeter than natural sugar. So there's this idea that it's going to alter alter our taste buds or our children's taste buds. How can they prefer, say, a blueberry to some keto-friendly monk fruit? You know, they put a ton of it in there, or stevia. It's going to be sweet. You basically alter the taste buds, and then normal food becomes more bland and less. Mm-hmm. So these are really interesting ideas about not just artificial sweeteners, which we all know good, but the stevias and the monk fruit. Really, really, especially also in drinks.
Yep.
It's quite devastating, because they will never drink water, because I'm not going to drink water if I can get a stevia sugar water, even if it's stevia or, you know, a better sugar or a zero calorie sweetener. It's still going to really make water quite awful and the problem.
Wow. You guys just gave a ton of information. There's like a lot to unpack there. So what I'm hearing is, like, first of all, which is echoing to your point that a calorie is not exactly a calorie. So, you know, eating whole fruits, which then you get the quality sugar there.
With the
and also
with the fiber.
With the fiber.
Yeah.
And then
20 oranges, but you can certainly squeeze and drink 20 oranges. I mean, oranges isn't terrible because you still get the vitamins and minerals, but you just, when you add the fiber, it's actually the antidote to the poison, quote unquote. I wouldn't really call it a poison, but with the fiber, it makes it much more palatable, as it slows down the sugar going to our liver. So it allows the liver to digest, turn it into fat.
Yeah. And then we should really pay attention on these alternative sugars, and then not using it too much. And then lastly is try to bake at home and then do it yourself, so you can really have control over the quality and the quantity of what you're doing. What are you putting into your food?
She also mentions very interesting point about you can control the quality of ingredients, and you'll find yourself eating less because it's better ingredients. So when we and more nutrition, your body says, I've had enough. when you take some cheap, trashy, you know, type of, you know, dessert, you eat, you just can eat so much of it because what ends up happening is it doesn't fill up. There's no satiety. Their body's saying, you know, it's not getting anything worth
yeah. it. So what are some like healthy swaps that we can do to limit like sugar and other harmful ingredients in the family's diet?
Yeah. I think, you know, starting with when you're at the grocery store, you want to read in the ingredients. And on our site, we have lots of ingredients that you want to try to stay clear of, things that are actually going to cause, like Tariq said, you to eat more of the food, where you just need, almost like can't stop eating it. The other thing, like I mentioned, is look at the added sugar. And the good thing today is that there's so many brands out there that are making, you know, simple ingredient, no added sugar foods. And so I would say just look at the, you know, for example, if it's a peanut butter, you want to look for something that just is organic, if you can, nuts, and then maybe a salt. And that's it. High fructose corn syrup, you don't need the palm oil, all that stuff in there. So minimize the ingredients. Look for a no added sugar, you know, alternative. Bake at home. I mean, even things like ice cream, we bake that at home. I think that's a good swap for your regular ice cream. And then swaps for, you know, I kind of talked about this on our stories today, is just swaps for seed oils. So and butter is actually wonderful compared to like a vegetable oil. Gosh, we could talk swaps a lot. I would say we have lots of posts on that where we're swapping this for that. But can you think of anything else?
I think the most important, things are to avoid vegetable oils if at all possible. You know, use a you know, cleaner fat. And I think the second thing would be what you just covered, no added sugar. If you can use sugar from fruit, even dried fruit is going to be better than the artificial sweeteners, or even the monk fruit or stevia. Again, we're not fully, but it's something to be aware of, which is not very well tested, and we don't really know what it's going to do to our kids.
Yeah, I think you actually helped me simplify it in my mind. So if we're talking swaps, I think, you know, look for a no added product, no added sugar product. But then also when it comes to seed oils, and we can maybe go into this a little bit more, but swap that in and of itself, like I said, for butter, but also things like ghee and tallow. Mm-hmm. A lot of times now you'll see like popcorn that's popped with coconut oil, which is wonderful. Or ghee. Yeah, and I say those are the two biggest things that you could really swap out. That will just have really great impacts on your health.
She did something quite interesting. She actually spread some ghee over some Hue crackers. You couldn't believe it. I don't really like the Hue crackers that much, but the ghee I'm not that crazy about. But the two together made a really nice snack. Kids liked it. I liked it. So I thought you just had to experiment. Mm-hmm. And again, those crackers, you know, 10 of those, you're still satisfied. Where I remember I used to eat those peanut butter crackers you buy in the package at Camp Austin, I think they were called. Yeah. I could eat like 5 packs of those when I was a kid. No, you're never satisfied.
I was going to ask about the vegetable oil and seed oil question later, but since we're kind of on it, I'm just going to ask, like, why are seed oil and vegetable oil a concern?
Yeah, I think, so there's lots of different concerns for them. In my opinion, it comes down to really two foundational reasons. The first is that the seed oils are primarily made up of this polyunsaturated fatty acid. So unlike like a saturated fat that we'll see in animal fats, or a monounsaturated fat, things we see in avocados, coconuts, olives, all that, those two fats burn as this really clean, beautiful energy in our body. The polyunsaturated fats, and they're often called PUFA for short, these, we just need a tiny, tiny amount. And in excess, rather than burning as clean, beautiful energy, they really get stored in like our adipose tissue or cell membranes. And it's there where they just promote inflammation. They stay there for a long time. I mean, what's the half-life of linoleic acid?
680 days.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, it takes at least two, three years to get them out of your body. So that's the first, is that it contains this linoleic acid, and we really want to minimize that. Like, it should be about 2% of our daily caloric intake. And with the addition of seed oils, it's upwards now about 10-11%. That's so why,
20%, 18-20%.
Yeah. And so, you know, that is linked to these like chronic human illnesses, things like diabetes, cardiovascular obesity,
it's devastating for our health. And the other reason is that when you think about the processing of these seed oils, so this linoleic acid, it's super unstable, breaks down so easily. And being that it's the majority of what makes up seed oils, you figure these seed oils are, you're trying to get every bit of that oil from the seed. And so they're like high heat extracted. Then they're, cleansed using things like hexane or these harsh chemicals. They're actually bleached to make it so that they're not foggy and it's that clear colored liquid. They're deodorized. So harsh processing, harsh chemicals, which we're ingesting when we eat this oil, not to mention that processing is breaking it down. And when linoleic acid breaks down, it breaks down into these harmful byproducts, things like HNE, or you want to talk about that?
Not just toxic, they're toxic aldehydes. And the most, the one most currently studied is it's called HNE. I don't remember the exact long name. It's kind of a difficult, but if you look up HME, Google search it, it's been linked several studies. We have a guide coming out, a resource guide on seed oils. That'll be well worth, it's a little technical, that's long, and we hope you read it. But at the end of the day, it goes into a lot of those details and what exactly happens. What studies show that it's been linked to obesity, metabolic dysfunction, diabetes, hypertension, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, Parkinson's. I mean, the list goes on, dementia, brain fog, fatigue. The idea is the linoleic acid, as she just said, is an omega-6 fatty acid, which is a necessary or essential element. We must ingest that. However, very small amounts are needed, and no one has really ever will be deficient in this. Real issue is when it gets oxidized. When this substance omega-6, or particular linoleic acid is a type of omega-6, okay? But linoleic acid is the most common omega. It's about 80% of all omega-6 acids. But this omega-6 fatty acid, once it gets oxidized, when it interacts with oxygen, and we have oxygen all in our body, it breaks down in these at least 18 toxic aldehydes. So, and these are not good for our cell membranes or cell structure, inflammatory and so forth. It's technical, but I would argue that it's probably worse than trans fats. And that's, some argue, when you ingest seed oils, do you get trans fats? Some say yes, some say no, but irrespective, the toxic aldehydes are probably worse on the whole. Yes, worse than trans fats. And we know how bad trans fats are. Right. Trans fats.
Somebody just asked, are the seeds okay eliminating the oil? Eating the whole sunflower or hemp?
Yeah. So, the good thing is that there's so many, it's kind of like a good analogy would be a piece of fruit. So in with the sugars, the delicious sugar and fruit, also fiber and, the whole thing together, the whole package, our body loves. And so the same can kind of be said with seeds too, in that the whole seed itself is kind of, go ahead.
Well, I mean, I don't know what she's saying. It's exactly, it has information. The seed and everything within the seed, the shell has certain nutrients that counteract, it extract, or you try to take one part and leave out the other. Same with refined grain. Remember when they just take the germ or the endosperm, and when you use that, it's like, that's when you get into a problem. But if you take, bread, the whole grain, it's less toxic. It's got the fiber, got other things. So it just, when we start manipulating things, we're not good at that, unfortunately. I don't want to be pessimistic, but by and large, people talk about ancestral. The more ancestral we eat, it seems to be the better, at least currently.
Yeah, that's well said. Thanks.
And you have actually a great resource that's coming out, which is the ultimate guide on how to cook without seed oils. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, we're really excited about that. I mean, these seed, in our opinion, in my opinion, at least, I won't speak for you, it's the number one thing you could do to improve your health. And I saw it firsthand. I started cutting out seed oils like maybe 3 years ago. And I was the one, since I was little, I would just, I'd look at the sun and get burned. And so there's all these pictures of me growing up, and I just have all this sunscreen like lathered on me always. And they say, you know, once you eliminate seed oils, you know, you actually don't get sunburn anymore because, number one, your skin can kind of feel the natural rays of the sun. It knows when it's getting caught off and when it should kind of get out of the sun. But it just, the sun doesn't hit you the same way. And so we're actually down, we took the kids down to Disney World earlier this year. And so 2 whole days I was out in the sun. Now I did try to get in the shade as much as I could, but like full days in the sun. And I'm not even joking when I say I didn't burn. So wow. It's incredible. The power that this has, you know, eliminating this from your body. And we get all of these messages on the daily of just my eczema cleared up when I eliminated it. My acne went away. My inflammation was reduced, you know, via the markers and all this stuff. So anyways, we think it's one of the top things you could do for your health. And we're that passionate about it that we're like, we're going to write a guide to make it really easy for everyone to kind of tell the background in a really easy to digest way of like, why are seed oils so harmful? But then also, what should you use as an alternative? Is sesame oil okay? What about refined or unrefined? Then we have in there like the brands that we trust and what you need to look for and all of that good stuff. So it ends up, it's over a 50-page book we put together. We're super excited. And actually, pre-orders start tomorrow for that. But it's just like everything you need to know about seed oils and how you can avoid them and what you should use instead.
Just one quick addition. Yeah. The Seed Oil Ultimate Guide is more pragmatic. It will have some of the basic foundational stuff to understand, but it's going to be like, how can I take this information and make this? The resource guide that's coming, of course, will be for free on our website. Is going to get more into the science. How did we get messed up? What happened? Why, you know, where did we go wrong? And is it a problem? So it will track the history of seed oils, you know, when it was introduced in 1909 by Procter & Gamble. You know, because remember, the first seed oil was cottonseed oil in 1866, and it was waste. It was industrial. It was a lubricant to lubricate machines. And then basically they say, well, what can we do with this? Well, let's try feeding it to, let's try to keep our cows make it. And believe it or not, the cows survived. So, okay, well, that's cool. Let's try actually feeding it to our cows. And the cows did okay. And then so, what if we kind of like mix it with olive oil? What if we put it in our foods? So what based popular science wrote a very famous quote in the early 1900s, actually 1890s, you know, said, so what started out roughly as industrial waste became food and also became everywhere. And this was like an 1898 popular science wrote that up. We've got that quote actually in the primer or the resource guide. But it's fascinating how seed oils basically entered our diet. And Dr. Kenobi, who's an excellent researcher and his work's fantastic, Dr. Chris Kenobi, talks about if you look at the food supply, what has changed the most percentage-wise from in pre-1900, you can go and you can type in New York, 1912, and you can see how a lot of people in New York, you could see how there's basically most people are very thin. Not, you know, there wasn't much, you didn't see much chronic disease or obesity. And what happened? And so what he believes and what the research is showing is that we have basically increased seed oil consumption has been the largest increase in our, mm-hmm. in our more than sugar, more than proportionally, more than anything.
Wow. That's all. I love that. The scientific background, but then you also have the book that's like super practical that people can use it to like guide their like daily cookings and everything.
Yes, yes. Okay, she has to nudge me when I get a little too talkative. So sorry about that.
You're fine. No, this is like awesome information because I think a lot of time also one issue with the science, people don't really know the why. You kind of have to like let people know the why, then tell them what to do about it.
Well, I just don't understand how many. Anyone wouldn't want to know why. With enough incentive, you can, with enough why, you can do anything, right?
Exactly.
You want something, there's not much motivation, right? So,
which now we're talking about cooking, right? You also have like great posts and then a lot of tips on like actually cooking together can help kids instill their healthy habits. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think, you know, cooking has so many benefits. I don't even know where to start with this. I think, you know, I think for us, we're so busy and then the kids are in school and then it's like they come home and then all of a sudden you got to make dinner, you got to get dinner ready. And then, next thing you know, you're like working on the bedtime routine and then off to bed. It's like, well, I didn't really even get that much quality time with them today, especially during a week. And so to start, I think cooking provides quality time. So it's like the kids get home and everyone kind of, and this isn't every day, listen, this isn't every day, but an ideal situation, everyone has their own job and maybe someone's chopping up something, maybe someone's adding the spices on something, or maybe someone's mixing things. But it's that time where we're usually playing music or just, you know, talking about our day. And it's a real way to connect first and foremost, which is wonderful. Number two, it's just like increasing their food exposure. So, you know, they're actually touching the stuff that they're going to be eating, which a lot of research says, and they're more likely to eat it because they really had a part in it. And then I think also just when we're cooking at home, again, we have the opportunity to control the ingredients. So if you go out to a restaurant, likely it's not going to be the highest quality. You know, it's probably definitely not going to be organic. It may not be grass-fed. You know, it's going to have probably lots of salt, lots of flavors in it. Whereas if it's at home, we get to control every single ingredient that we're using. And so hands down, the meal itself is always going to be way more nutrient dense than what you're getting outside. And then it's just a good habit, I think, to get into, you know, to teach the kids skills. So, you know, for example, our son, he just turned 8. He can make his own breakfast, his own lunch. He made his own cookies the other day. And it's pretty...
Ice cream.
Yeah, he makes the ice cream.
Oh, wow.
Wonderful to watch too. So you're just giving them these life skills that they're going to be able to take with them if they go to college and then beyond. So there's so many wonderful things that can happen in the kitchen. He's working, speaking of my son too, he's at the age where he's doing divisional math right now. And it's amazing to me how much baking has helped with his. So he knows. You know, from just using half a cup of sugar here or this or that. And those measurements has just really allowed him to understand fractional math too, which is really a great thing. Language development. I mean, there's so many fine motor skills that they'll get by just chopping. So it's, I mean, there's too many to list benefits in my opinion of cooking at home.
I think the research shows clearly shows that cooking has so many benefits. Even they even say it's one of the best ways to live longer. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, and you know, connect. It's probably associated with connection. Is that big Harvard study showed that out of all the things, you know, obesity, diabetes, the thing that predicted the longest or the most longevity is how connected we are. And even though we're in a world of all these devices, we've never been more disconnected.
Yep, we're a big proponent on cooking, eating at home as well, because that's like one of the best way to reduce your toxic chemical exposures. Yeah. So we're always
save money too. You know, that's the. Realize it's a huge money saver.
Absolutely. I know we're a little bit over, but I still have a few more minutes because I wanted you to talk about your other two books.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we do.
Okay, please tell us, because you have the superhero foods, and you also have the superhero sleep, and then you also have like a superhero saga as activity. So tell us about each of those.
Yeah, so we have lots of ideas for children's books. And so we wanted to start with really like these wellness pillars. So nutrition, one food, whole ingredient, how these foods give us powers. And then right alongside of that, just as important is sleep. And so we do have our second book. It was My Superhero Sleep, where we talk about, we kind of motivate kids and share with them the importance of sleep, why sleep itself, good quality sleep, can give you powers. And then also we kind of walk you through lots and lots of tips of how to set yourself up to get a good night's rest, the best quality sleep, really in a kid-friendly format. But we're surprised at how many adults like say, learn so much from reading this book as well. So that's super exciting. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, through the sleep book, it's, you know, if there's a lot of science-based tips. I even wrote a compendium, hopefully will come out, detailing all the science behind, for example, the suprachiasmatic nucleus and morning light exposure, right? The circadian, the importance of a bedtime routine. What are the benefits of napping? Keeping your room clutter free and how that will promote sleep. You know, just many different tips and tricks, as she mentioned, how to get your kids to think sleeping. Not only think sleeping is important, it's cool. It's important. It also will complement your eating as well. Your nutrition. Well, you crave carbs. You crave junk food. This is shown study after study, you have, it's also sleep's critical for maintaining proper weight. Mm-hmm. If you're not sleeping, lose. And there's just so many things, they're hand in hand. So really can't have one without the other. We're very proud of the sleep book. Is it's got some good stuff in there. It's well worth your read.
Yeah. And then our third, and we have so many different ideas for different directions, but we were both really inspired having kids that soon to be two, all the way up to our oldest is graduating this year from high school. But just the power of mindset. And we just felt really compelled to make our next book on mindset. So that's actually in the works right now. We're just about to start the illustration process. Super excited on that. And that one should be out like probably right before the school year starts again this year. So that's coming soon as well.
Yeah, it all works together. You know, the mindset is, mm-hmm. you know, kids, this is basically the idea of putting growth in a fixed mindset. As Carol Dweck in her great, you know, basically hammering in those important ideas to kids sooner than later. It's just absolutely foundational.
That's huge. So thank you so much for this information. And thank you so much for what you do. We're going to have to invite you back once this book, like a new book comes out, because I think every parent, every kid should read them.
We do too.
Thank you. So thank you so much. And I will include, okay. And thank you everyone for joining, and be sure to follow My Superfoods. And then we're going to have all the information in the LinkedIn bio promoting this Instagram live. So thank you so much.
Thank you for great having us. Jenna, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.